This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitchell. I am currently in Woodstock, New Brunswick, and I'm talking to Ryan McLeod in Amsterdam. Netherlands or...
Yeah, Netherlands, Holland, Lowlands.
So my first question is how did you end up in Amsterdam?
Yeah, it's a good one. A lot of people ask. I don't have a great answer, but just like a while ago when I was working on Black Box, I kind of wanted to try taking advantage of being able to work remote when I could, and that was like a thing. And I had been here a long time ago for a few days and was kind of interested, so I thought I would come try it for like a little bit, and ended up never leaving. So it's been 3 years now.
Wow, you've been 3 years. And wow.
Yeah, I've just been slowly falling in love with it. So I'm still back home to the States as often as I can. But
I thought you were in. I don't know why I had. Were you not in the Valley area or San Francisco?
I was never really in the Bay. I was in San Luis Obispo, California. So like 3 hours south of the Bay, hour north of Santa Barbara. Near Big Sur. So I went to Cal Poly University there and kind of stuck around for a long time. Really lovely place.
So is that where that part of the world is where you're from?
Originally San Diego, but yeah, then like 9 years, I guess, in SLO, San Luis Obispo, and now 3 years in Amsterdam. So yeah.
What did you study in Cal Poly?
Computer science. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Kind of a bit of an accident, I think. It's sort of a funny school. Like, it's a polytechnic school, and you apply with a major, and then like you just start taking classes in that. There's not a lot of like, let me explore for a few years, which has its pluses and minuses. But apparently I had applied computer science when I applied, and then I ended up deciding to go there. So did that, tried to do design on the side, but they didn't really want me to do it as a major. So I had to figure it out myself.
So you took it as electives kind of thing? Design courses and
I was like trying to minor or like dual major for a while, but yeah, they didn't want me to do that. And then a lot of the classes were like Dreamweaver and like flexographic printing stickers and like cool stuff, but not like UI UX type hot web 2.0 whatever was at that time.
Yeah. Right. What sort of what year time frame was that?
That was 2019 to 2014. I stuck around for an extra year and got a master's. So
right.
Nice little bonus. Okay.
So, I mean, cause the mythos that I've heard about Black Box is that you were more of a designer. You felt more of a designer than a developer. Is that the case?
Yeah. I don't know. I've always felt I don't quite identify with any of the roles completely. Definitely don't feel like a game developer. Although now I like accept that. I think I felt like a developer, maybe less of a designer, if anything. I was doing web development for a long time, but was always just like really interested in interface design and like novel interfaces and stuff. And I think that's what drove me to want to work on iOS and like learn that so I could make my own interfaces and whatever. It's like not quite the same when you're doing stuff on the web. Like you could do fun stuff, but it wasn't like inventing the pull to refresh or gestural interactions and stuff like that. So I think the designer thing, there was a big imposter syndrome for a while because it's like, I'm not trained in that or anything. I just think I have a good eye for it. But like, I couldn't use Figma or work on a team. I feel very feral. Like it works, but.
I think there's a lot of people feel self-taught on who do iOS development. Like I for instance come from an artistic background and fell into development through my need to want to make my computer bend to my will, you know.
Then
the iPhone was just, you know, I think it was just too cool when it came out, and then it was too cool when we could develop for it. I remember the debates about that. The thing that's interesting to us, or to me in particular, is that Black Box was kind of your first app, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
it was an interesting concept. I mean, I stumbled across it early I can't remember how, maybe a tweet or something like that. But I saw it, grabbed it, started playing around with it. And it was sort of like, I think initially, I can't remember how many puzzles you had. You didn't have very many, but it was like
40 something.
Trying, yeah, trying to do weird things with your phone, like, you know, hold it level, hold it, you know, perpendicular, hold it upside down, like some of the puzzles to, and the concept of sort of like, I guess, getting, closing those, you sort of have a target on the screen.
The lights,
Yeah, they had to kind of close them in certain ways by physically using the device, right? Which is really a novel concept, right?
Yeah, there's been a few apps and things that have poked at that, but I wanted to like create an entire kind of little ecosystem or game around it, I guess. It just, the platform always felt so cool. Like really early on, I think one of the coolest things were seeing what people could do. It was almost like Apple was like, here's a little like development platform with sensors, like make stuff. And people did really cool stuff early on. There was like stud finders that used disruptions for the magnetometer thing. There was like a little tractor app I had where you put the phone on the table and it would vibrate and the tractor would like move across the side it was pushing or whatever. There was like the pocket warmer apps. There was like the fan to blow out candles, like all that stuff really stuck and captivated me. And then there was like the Inception app that would unlock different sounds if it was like raining or if you were in a different country and stuff. And then Clear had like secret themes that unlocked at different times. And I just like all that Easter egg stuff, super fun. So bolded it into a bit more. Just the idea also, I think it was driven by sort of a like race to the bottom in games at the time. It felt like there was a big push for like the one tap stuff or like the barely tap the screen, endless runner and stuff like that, which were fun. Mm-hmm. But like, it just was like getting where you divorced from how cool the device was. And all these things were like lowest common denominator, that they were just like a touch game that you could put on any glass surface with like a touch screen.
Right.
And you just like had all this cool stuff that could like understand your world and make it a part of the game. And not many people were using that really.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and like I said, I think it's sort of, I do remember talking to you about this, but, you know, sort of finding things that you could do with the phone that wasn't necessarily documented. I mean, like that was sort of the case for a lot of us in those early days. You know, the documentation was there, but there wasn't ways to access the stuff, right? I think you had to be pretty inventive, right?
Yeah, it depends. I've like kind of avoided, you know, I don't use private APIs or like have avoided things that feel brittle or that Apple could get rid of, but there's been weird stuff. Like the weirdest, most annoying one was probably detecting the silent switch for, there was like no real way to do that, but you could like play a silent sound and like get the time, how long the completion handler took or something, like,
oh really?
Okay. Run that every like 30 seconds or half a second. It's been weird stuff to just make it look like it's meant to function correctly. But
well, and I think that I remember Trent changing from one device to another. Changes in hardware must have sort of made challenges for you keeping, like, how do you have a Touch ID phone versus a Face ID phone versus an iPad that doesn't have
definitely
accelerometer and gyroscopes.
Yeah, it slowed me down a lot. There's only been like one hardware change that really sucked, and that was like the iPhone 6S changed the audio chip for the microphone, and like the audio libraries were not as great at that time, and it sort of screwed up, like, if you're trying to do fast Fourier stuff, it was like the buffer sizes changed and figuring that out. But stuff like that hasn't happened in a long time. Now it's just like, we switch from Touch ID to Face ID and like make that work, or the shape of the share sheet changed to update that. So every iOS now, there's kind of a lot of things I have to do just to make it appear like nothing's gone wrong. Removal of the headphone jack, you know, right. Fun stuff.
Yeah, like I do, and I'm trying to think off the top of my head, but there were a couple of times when I was playing Black Box, and I think I had changed phones, and there was some oddity about the way something behaved. I just remember, you know, I to be honest with you, I haven't played with it in a while. I've gone back in a few.
Yeah,
I mean, nothing. You know, Mark and I, you know, at one point, Mark and I were going neck and neck with how many you closed, and
you know,
grabbing all the add-ons and stuff like that. Because I actually have a photo of him, and a few times we've actually met face to face. Comparing our, you know, holding up our phones, comparing our Black Box accomplishments, right?
I think I remember a tweet or something. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. And then, I think you got a tweet from me because I was able to do one of the altitude ones where, and I'm giving spoilers for people who haven't played Black Rocks, but you know, there are some pretty cool challenges. Yeah. And I had to go to, we ended up driving to this place called Eagle's Nest in near where our cottage used to be, north of Peterborough. And there was like this, I said to my wife, what's that up there? She says, oh, that's the Eagle's Nest lookout. And I said, well, how high up is that? Guess what I'm going to do, right? So we drove up, and I remember it was like super steep and trying to get my, you know, my regular car up this hill.
Yeah.
And then standing on top of the hill in northern Ontario, taking a picture for the Twitter, right?
I love it. I think it was like Shield Rock or something I almost... There was like
Canadian Shield. Canadian Shield. Yeah, it's part of the Canadian Shield, which is like part of something was left over from when a glacier eroded away.
Cool. Yeah, that photo's in my mind, kind of. Yeah, I mean, that was the idea of making that challenge, was to give people that extra push to do that. There were so many crazy stories, like back in the day when it was really popping off, just people describing how they just drove out in the middle of the night in the rain to like drive up some mountain, and their partner's like, what are you doing? Don't worry about it.
Yeah. It's all about Black Box. Here, hold the phone, look at it. Tell me if I've meet the goal yet.
I gotta get more crazy stuff out. It's gotten kind of tamer recently, but
yeah. Well, I remember I was excited. I got to go to California for something. I think it was for work or whatever, which gave me the distance from home goal.
Right? Yeah. You know, spoiler alerts. Yeah.
You could do like 200, I think it was like 200 miles, I'm going to say, because I think it's in miles, not kilometers, but
it's in kilometers.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. And then I think the last light was like, you had to be like, I'm not going to say how far away, but you had to be far away from
there. Very far. Yeah.
So that's a bit of a teaser there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So speaking of far from home, we were talking earlier about like how you ended up in Amsterdam. I do know that like in the early days of iOS, like I want to say 2010, 2011, I met Mike Lee at 360 iDev, and I believe he lives in Amsterdam, because they were calling it Amsterdam. Have you ever heard of Amsterdam?
I remember I stumbled across an old website early on when I moved here and was kind of looking for people.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a like really good little iOS community. Like, it's just really impressive, the government apps here, from like the post office to the train service to the government inbox type app and stuff. They're all like support dark mode and are really well made and like, just, I don't know, impressive to see.
Yeah, because I guess the brain trust went out there, right? So and you said you said earlier you just it was just something, you'd been there before, you wanted to go back and check it out, and now you're stuck there, right?
Yeah, against my will.
did you went out, you were there obviously before the pandemic hit and all that stuff, but I mean,
yeah, it was a pretty good place to be. I mean, don't need to get into all the details of it, but we had like a pretty largely normal summer and got to run and do stuff. It wasn't, a lot of places like France and Spain were pretty locked down, but things were fairly normal here. So it sucks not being able to go home for about a year and a half, but I finally made it back, went home and finally got to see everyone. So.
Well, this is my first trip to see family here in New Brunswick. Yeah, I have cousins in Fredericton just down the road, and you know, obviously people here on the farm as well, right? So this first plane ride I've been on in 2 years, right? So kind of weird.
Yeah,
it's good times. So how, like, from a business point of view, like, I'm curious, like, did Black Box kind of take off, or was it like, how did it affect you, like, as a developer?
Yeah. I've been really lucky with how much Apple's liked it and just kind of how the ecosystem has been. I think having not worked on any other apps, I don't quite know what it's like. I hear things from other developer friends and stuff, but I think games in some ways are easier and harder. Like, I think people are more willing and ready to spend on games. I think Apple likes promoting games. There's also a lot of competition, and people kind of come in and out. So I think that helped for the most part. It's when I first launched it, I wasn't sure. I thought my measure of success like had to change a lot. I just was hoping maybe to get a few thousand people to download it, but I'd kind of done some of the basic math in my head, understanding conversion rates and stuff like that. to think like maybe it was possible to do it semi full time. But luckily I hadn't really taken on like a full time salaried job before. So I didn't know how much money I could be making. So I was pretty stoked to be making anything more than I was like freelancing as a web developer. So it's been up and down, but fairly stable, which has just always surprised me. I'm just always waiting for, you know, the number of people that haven't heard of Blackbox and would be interested in it to like run out at some point. But the game continues to get, you know, at least 1,000 new people finding it every day.
Wow, and that's pretty cool.
With enough, with like good sort of game design and stuff, that works out and I can do it full time. It's like not without stress, and I can't like grow a team to handle some of the things that I would like to not be doing.
Right.
But it's still kind of possible, I guess.
That's interesting. Yeah. I guess that's the goal, is to kind of grow as an entrepreneur. You want to kind of grow beyond being a lone wolf to someone who has a team, and then you eventually become a small company, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like that's the narrative. And there was people kind of encouraging me to go that route. People that wanted to work together, people that wanted to invest and stuff like that. And I just really, I think, was scared of that for a long time. Having anyone be dependent on me, and always thought I might just kind of want to like drop this and do something else. And I think I'm glad that I kept it that way. Sometimes I have kind of regrets on that. I see other app developer friends that are growing little teams and really able to like see their dreams sort of manifest a lot quicker. But I don't know. I'm very thankful. It's like afforded me a nice lifestyle and to have like the freedom that comes with. So.
Well, I think you mentioned you listened to the last episode with James Thompson. He sort of, in the same way, had this one app that he's been living
I don't understand. I've never understood it.
Yeah, well, he's got two. I mean, DragThing was a pretty popular utility. A lot of us had it on our computers. I think, like, when I mentioned DragThing to anybody who had a Mac back in the day, they're like, oh, yeah, I totally had that one. And, you know, not so much pCalc. I mean, pCalc is kind of a unique. To me, it was all sort of all. I mean, I got involved with it because I saw a tweet about it and it was pretty funny. Right. And I just thought it was ridiculous that, you know, you could put, you know, pCalc on everything that Apple made, you know. pCalc for the HomePod, pCalc for AirTag, you know, like, not quite that far, but you know, if he could. And I'm amazed again too, like, I have a lot of apps that I wrote back in the day, and they're still on the App Store, they're still being downloaded, and they're still like, they've got Objective-C. In fact, one of my apps that's still being sold uses manual memory management.
I never
made the jump to Arc with it, and it's still functioning and working and updatable and so on and so forth, right?
But, wow.
Yeah,
I'm so glad we don't have to do that anymore.
Well, so when did Blackbox start? When did you start working on it?
I started working on it technically, like, I opened the project, I think, the end of 2014, but really worked on it in 2015, mm-hmm. and then launched it early 2016. So
is it Swift or Objective-C or initially?
It was Objective-C, because I thought this newfangled thing is not going to be a thing for a while, and I was wrong.
It would have been a rough ride for the first 2 years.
It would have been a rough ride, I think, with all the libraries and stuff. But a few 3 years ago, I started transitioning everything new to Swift, and was so stoked at how well Apple plans that out for the cross support. So I think I'm like really close to a halfway point of almost half the code being Swift, but like 80 or 90% of what I interact with daily is in Swift. It's just mostly like old views and stuff. Right. So that makes my life a lot better. Yeah. But I can't wait to start a new project and have it just be 100%.
Swift UI. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
Swift UI is pretty cool. It is pretty like, I think you're probably,
I haven't played with it yet,
more concerned with, you know, collection views and
custom, you know, stuff is my concern. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that, I mean, what's nice about SwiftUI is you can blend in other things too, right? So I've done the same thing. I've got Objective-C apps. And I guess my question is, are you considering refactoring some of that older Objective-C stuff, or would you just leave it as it is?
Yeah. There's a part of me that really likes to procrastinate on real work by converting classes to Swift. because I think I can listen to like loud music and I feel like I'm working fast and accomplishing a lot, but I'm like doing pretty mindless stuff. And then I usually break something and I have to convert another class into Swift, and then I destroy something and I have to make some weird enum interop thing. So I've sort of taught myself to not, if it's not broke, don't fix it to some right. degree, unless it's easy. But I say that all the time and then 4 hours pass. So I don't think it's really possible for me to, because Blackbox has like, I don't know, 50 custom level views, and it's really not necessary to write, change all those over. But like all the core components of the game, I would eventually like to get ported over, and that is right. sort of happening. It's just hard with some of the stuff where you can't inherit, can't subclass a Swift object as an Objective-C object, right?
Right. Yeah.
So
to a certain
extent, a lot of those views I can't. Yeah, I realized yesterday that I could just extend the Objective-C empty class and get pretty close. So
nice. Yeah.
Maybe I'll do that more. But
are you talking about extending it as a category or extending it in on the Swift side?
I could make like the Objective-C class and then extend it with a Swift file
right.
that has all the functions. And then I would still be able to subclass it with the old Objective-C subclasses that I'm not able to convert.
And then you'd be able to read back from what you've done in Swift, or the Swift stuff is sort of an island on its own, like the extension, I mean.
Yeah, it's just an island for like the superclass to, because I'm usually not interacting with the subclasses. Like the individual level, if it's not broken, is fine. It's like the core game level class that I need to muck around in. But yeah, I have a good friend that always is telling me not to mess with the stuff that's not worth it.
Yeah, no,
people would like me to move on from Blackbox to begin with. So, but it's a fun distraction.
I find that with my apps, there's a lot of really clunky Objective-C stuff in there. But I look at it every now and then, and I kind of go, oh, I've got other things to do.
Yeah,
rather than try and it's the case with a lot of things, unless we're refactoring something major. It's not often worth the effort to go through just for the sake of going through it. That's the sort of, you know, discussion point you hear a lot of people, like early in the Swift days, you know, didn't quite abandon their entire Objective-C code,
right?
Rewrote the whole app. That's the story. Rewrote the whole app in Swift. And well, that's possible for a new app, right? It's probably a little challenging for, there were some talks back in the early days if you're doing that, right?
It's difficult when you're trying to juggle the in-between and you have weird architecture and you need to use the enums in both or whatever. But it's getting there. I think I take sort of like a Boy Scout approach now of like when I need to use it or update it, I'll often be like, okay, now is the time to like rewrite it, because it'll probably save me time in the end. Sometimes I blow things up though. All those issues importing headers and forward declarations. Blah.
Yeah, and since you're a team of one, you're the only one that knows about that, right?
Yeah, it's just like all up here.
Yeah.
There's some good comments.
From yourself?
Yeah, a lot of comments talking to myself.
Yeah.
It's like this because of this. Like, yes.
Yeah, don't break
four
this.
Years. Yeah. Don't.
Yeah. Like,
I wonder what would happen.
Some of my favorite comments is, I can't believe this works. And and a lot of Xcode ? Right?
Oh, nice. Like
remember the days when you'd go, you'd just touch a storyboard and all of a sudden it would update? Like,
yeah, I don't do that.
Wow. Yeah. So I used to avoid touching stuff, right? Or you know,
oh, like, I see.
From somewhere else, go and forget what to call it, you know, remove the or ignore the changes, right? Kind of thing. But
mine's mostly notes to future self of just like, this is like this because the microphone on the iPhone 7, blah, blah, blah. Like, don't try to over engineer this. Don't try to correct this.
Just out of curiosity, do you do any sort of analytics to sort of see what your customer base looks like? Like what devices they're using? And
yeah, I do all the normal basic analytics. I was really interested in like the data science stuff back before it became kind of, I don't know, a dirtier word or something. Mm-hmm. So I would collect all this different, you know, metrics on the levels and stuff like that, but I never actually had the time to like go in and do that. And then I realized like, oh wow, this is why it's like a full-time data scientist position job, like, I'm sure it would be really helpful, but for me, it's just like basic health metrics of like, why did this, nobody's solving this challenge anymore. Like probably broken, or like this challenge gets solved a lot less on iOS 15 or whatever it is. But I'm not doing nearly as much of that as I would like to. I do some basic like A/B tests these days, which I think is just like really helpful and necessary to kind of make things work as an indie without a lot of guessing in the dark. But
yeah. So do you find you have to do a lot of marketing to promote the app? Or I mean, I bought your pin, by the way. Thank you.
Thanks. It arrived well.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Nice cool. Little packaging, yeah, I got to say.
Thanks. You figured out the little extra bit.
Oh, I haven't figured out the extra bit. Now I have to go back and look.
No, I just, you still I just, have the packaging.
I do. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, the merch has been fun. What was your question? Marketing. Yeah,
marketing.
I haven't done a ton of marketing. I think like early on, I was trying to get into it and figure it out and do like competitions on social media. And I was like, I made like a sealing wax thing, and I would send people letters of thank you and stickers. And I was pretty involved. And then I realized just, I didn't know what I was doing. If I'd had more money at the time, I would have hired someone else to like kind of maybe figure it out. Or if I'd been scrappier, more hustly, I could have found an intern or figured something out. But it just always stressed me. And I kind of had enough coming from Apple. And I think I kind of learned if I like do cool things using their features and let them know, like those features were so much huger than any press that I could get was. There were like some viral moments that happened. There was one from like Mashable story on Snapchat that just like was totally insane and led to, you know, like 100,000 downloads in a day type wow. deal. Just ludicrous. Something I had like no control or didn't see coming. So it was like, I realized I could like try to engineer for events like that or like pour a ton of money into like influencer stuff or ads, but without really knowing what I was doing, I think I sort of stayed away from those things. So sure. It's been pretty much all organic stuff. Like I try to build in things into the app to make people like talk about it with each other or like want to share it. But try to stick to kind of the organic route. I don't know. I mean, if Apple changes like their algorithms completely overnight, my entire thing could dry up. So we'll see. Well, I'm just trying to get it to like as high as a point as I can before
yeah.
like, turn off the money faucet or whatever.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I've noticed over the years that, like, you know, I've got a few apps. I call it pizza money in my case, right? Like, you know, at the end of the month, I can buy a pizza. But, and I'm not really putting a lot of effort into it, to be honest with you. But
yeah.
But I've noticed that the size of the pizza I can buy has gotten smaller over time.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah. So, yeah. So if I remember correctly, you do a lot of in-app purchases to sort of open up sets and stuff like that. And I think you also have a tip jar kind of deal, like buy me a burrito. Is that where your income comes from in the app? Or
yeah, I mean, it's 100% the in-app purchases. Yeah. Just sort of weird when you like pay your rent and realize it comes from, you know, hundreds of people as $5 purchases.
Yeah.
But it's been crazy learning how all of that works. I launched the app like with, it's like 80% of the puzzles were free. I think the last 20% you could buy, it was going to be $2 for launch week. I made it like 99 cents and then you could unlock hints for 99 cents. I just wanted it to be like simple and not have ads and be really clean.
Yeah.
And then like, it took me forever learning like people were very willing to pay $2. A lot of people didn't want to pay $2 once they got to the last 10 levels because they already got like 40 levels for free and they didn't find it was worth it. Like a lot of people just like never got that far in the game before they deleted it to begin with.
Oh, really?
So there's a lot of like learnings and failings from that. It really helped talking to other indie developers and stuff that would push me and be like, you gotta lock this down more, you know. Yeah. And I think I get kind of I don't know, like too nice about it sometimes. And yeah. having to remember that, like, if I can't be successful with this, then like more the same people that are enjoying it, like, can't get more puzzles. If I have to be like considering taking on a full-time job and stopping Black Box, that's also like not worth it for people. So yeah. it was good to kind of learn that and like lock down more and increase the prices a bit. I've simplified it now. It's just like half the game is locked, half the game's free. I think it's like $5 to get the rest of it. And then I do packs of hints. And that was another thing early on. I just had the 99 cent hints. The app was like really not doing well after the first few months. And I was interviewing places now that I like finally had an app on the app store to show off.
Right.
And I did like this one last ditch hurrah where I saw all the other games were doing like the bundles, the treasure chests and stuff. I tried to do it a little more tastefully. So it was like a $1 to $20 purchase of hints. And then I added a second pack of challenges for like $2 and launched that. And it was just like doubled revenue overnight sort of thing. Just like, oh, okay. Like I need to mess around with this more and just sort of listen to people. People asked to donate money too. They asked if they could support it better. I felt a little uncomfortable about that. And then eventually decided if I kind of made it like a physical representation, like the burrito and the coffee that you can buy for me in the game. If I gave people like a special secret app icon and stuff like that, it was more okay. And then eventually added the merch. But most of the income comes from the like puzzle packs and heads.
Yeah. So you haven't thought about Patreon or, cause I guess like I know a couple of apps developers, they changed their model, away from purchases to, subscription model. Right. So I don't know have you thought about that or would that work with you or?
Yeah, I think like the Patreon thing people have suggested, and it's like, I do like to treat it as a business. I don't want to necessarily like be under scrutiny and expectation and stuff like that. So this is a little more comfortable for me. Same goes with the subscription. It's like, I think if I had a subscription, I would really need to make sure I was releasing a new puzzle every month and I would need to have a schedule and I would need to hire people. Yeah. And I probably could do that with the subscription, but I don't really want to. So I think the app was, I designed it with an app purchase in mind. That's the way to make it sustainable. So it's not really built around that, but
okay, cool. Yeah.
Maybe so something else.
I guess the question is like, how do you come up with new puzzles? I mean, like what can there possibly be?
There's a million ideas left.
Oh really? Oh,
not a million, like maybe 50. Yeah. I have a long list. It's honestly not the hard part of creating the game, which I think
is
surprising to a lot of people. I'm thinking of ideas all the time when I'm running or biking or just, I don't know, they just pop up washing the dishes or whatever.
Yeah.
You have this also, like you understand the sort of attack space of the phone and the API, so to speak, and might kind of wonder about something. I think just being kind of curious, you know, like phone has that sensor, but nobody uses it like that. Like, would that work? You know?
Right. Right. Yeah.
Like how could that break in the future? How can you make that into a compelling puzzle? There's a lot of that. Yeah, the ideas come from all over, but there's no secret sauce process to it, I don't think.
I think it was pretty cool. Like, I loved the iPad where it first came out. Like, there was an Alice in Wonderland app where they had, you know, Lewis Carroll's illustrations were common. What do you call it? They were publicly available. They weren't copyrighted, right? Common, what do you call it?
Creative Commons.
Yeah. Sort of that kind of thing, right? They were out there in the public domain. So they built this app, and what was cool about it though is they used the accelerometer to move objects around the screen. So like, you know, when, you know, the pill bottle would, you know, the pills would fall all over the place, and that kind of mechanics was really kind of cool. And that, you know, that's, I think, part of where some of the things in Black Box come from, right? You know, like, you know, I love being able to use my, I use my iOS devices all the time, like to be able to use it like as a level or, you know, or a compass or those kind of things, right? And I think those are the interesting things. But you're right. I guess a lot of us don't really realize all the things that our phones can do that, you know, someone like you who tinkers with them does, right? So
this is something that always frustrates me and is what drives Black Box, is just there is so much available to make the context better for these apps, and you don't even have to notice it, you know, whether it's like adjusting the temperature of the screen, stuff Apple does with ambient light, or kind of understanding where you are to adapt things. Like, I want to see more apps thinking of those things and using them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's surprising. I remember when I got my first iPad, I was sitting in the backyard with a friend of mine. He had his first iPad. And like in Canada, we didn't have the iPad on day one. We had to drive to the States to get them. But we're sitting in the backyard. It was a sunny day. And all of a sudden, our iPad shut down because it got too hot. I'm like, what is that all about, right? And then the other day, it was just like here on the farm, we had the whole family together. And we were doing some family shots up on the deck. And I was using the flash, the fill flash, because it was a really bright day. And I wanted to, you know, like photography trick to light people up is use fill flash, right? And my phone said, I can't use the flash anymore until the phone cools down. It was like 30 degrees Celsius outside, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like those kind of things, like, you know, you don't even know your phone does this, right?
Yeah, no.
You know, like there are things that you're, I mean, and all the sort of magical stuff that we take for granted, like, you know, when you park your car using CarPlay and then you look at your phone, it knows where your car was because, you know,
totally
dropped a little geolocation on it, right? So
there's another unsettling one with the temperature that when your phone gets hot like that, it drops the maximum screen brightness.
Yeah.
And so you'll be like, what's going on? You go in control center and try to bring it back up. And it won't go until the device cools down. And then you see it kind of will do like a jump and come back up. But there's an API for the temperature.
Nice to know.
I have a little open source app you can install for this because I was having issues where I was doing animation testing and the animations would look really janky. And I finally figured out it was because the phone, I had it on like a wireless charger and it was doing all this intense stuff and it would get too hot. And then they would like downclock the CPU or GPU or whatever.
Right.
And you'd see stuttering. So just to be able to look at that and be like, oh, it's in its like critical temperature state. Okay. Let's pop it in the fridge for a minute.
Yeah. That's a hint for you people who want to play Black Box. I haven't done it yet.
I haven't done that one because I'm afraid of, inspiring wrath from above.
Yeah,
from Cupertino, exactly. I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So speaking of Cupertino and Apple, so you did win an Apple Design Award. Do you, what year was that you won?
2017.
Yeah. 2017. And what was that like about? Like, how did that hit you?
That was wild. Yeah, that it was really special. I don't know. It was just had always been a dream since whenever I had heard about that and sort of followed. I don't think I like fully even realized what that meant until it happened. Cause it just felt so foreign. And there was people early on when Black Box came out saying things on Twitter and stuff like, this is totally going to win an Apple Design Award. This should win a design award. And I was like, wow, I don't think that's true, but that's very kind. Especially when you're just like too close to your own work. And yeah. So when that happened, it was just very, very unreal. And also, very nice to feel like I could finally kind of consider myself a designer.
Well, yeah, I mean, like the companies that have won those awards, you know, have a whole team of people behind them. It's very, very I think there are a few, obviously, awards that go to like indie developers, but
it happens.
Yeah.
Really wild. So.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Congratulations on that, because I know how hard it is to win those and how selective they are about who they choose, right? So
it's a real honor. It's definitely changed my life for the better, I think, just with people it's opened doors. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. No, it's kind of cool. I mean, you know, I'm still dumbfounded that this is your first app.
Me too. many times it wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah, my first app I was pretty proud of that one too. But that was developed with a team of people and it was early days and we were probably too early for the market. But yeah, that's kind of
cool. No, I think it was so much easier by the time I got started. I mean we had Arc for starters. I sometimes I wonder because I really early on wanted to do the Stanford course and stuff like that and get into it. But I think I was kind of itching to do it for a long time. I'm glad it turned out this way and worked. There's many places along the way that it could have gone wrong and never been like this. So,
right.
Yeah.
So when you got started with iOS, did you do like the iTunes course or how did you get started?
I took a class at Cal Poly actually.
Oh, okay.
It was the first time they were offering it. They were like one of the first universities to offer it. And our professor, John Bilardo, had gone to, think, Apple to learn about teaching it or something.
Okay.
And yeah, it was Objective-C and with manual memory management and all that. I think it was just eye-opening that to realize that it wasn't that hard or foreign, you know, because I was mostly in school doing like Java and C programs. And then on the side, I was doing like web design and web development type stuff. And just for someone to be like, look, here's like the basic lifecycle stuff. The code is like not that different, you know, have at it. And all right. The stress of publishing something to the App Store the first time, once you get over that, it's just like, wow, I can just create stuff for the multi-tool that we all carry. Pretty rad.
Cool. And thankfully the internet hasn't been a challenge. We had, when James was on, we had a few seconds where like he would say something and I would just get like the first word.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, and edit those or have him repeat what he said, which is so far so good. So we have a section of the show I stole from Tammy and Roundabout Creative Chaos, where I ask some questions, just some random questions based on Marcel Proust's questions. Oh, and so if you're comfortable or whatever, I can throw some of these at you after okay. The phone stops ringing. Cool. So the first question, what is your motto?
Oh man. You might have added some silence out of this.
Yeah. Does Black Box have a motto?
I would just say, yeah. I mean, for Black Box, it's think outside the box. Personally, maybe it's more just like stay curious. Yeah, I think getting people to step back and sort of critically think about things is kind of one of the goals of Black Box. So I try to apply that to my own life.
Well, I remember when a lot of times when I'm doing art for the show, I always do a theme piece, right? Mm. And I remember the very first time that, so this is like a confession to you. The very first time, the first screen you see when you install the app, if I remember, it's like a black screen with white text on it. Yeah. I thought that was so cool. I stole that and used that for our episode art for that. Cool. when I talked about Black Box. But,
Yeah.
And I think you only see that at the very, 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 very beginning, right?
So it's only the very beginning, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the definition of Black Box.
And what is it?
How does it start? Yeah, one device with unknown internal functions, something. And then two, it's a game that redefines frustration.
Yeah. Cool. Well, there's your motto right there. Game that redefines frustration. So who are your heroes in real life?
They're tough, man.
Yeah.
Have these prepared. I don't know specifically. I'd have to think about it more, but I think just anyone that kind of like sees around the status quo and like breaks us forward a bit farther, like taking the right steps back or by being properly rebellious in like a train of thought. I can't think of a specific person.
So the people who push the boundaries, you know, try things, you know, fly across the Atlantic in a plane for the first time, that kind of stuff?
No, I think like more than being daring, more people that realize things don't have to be the way they've always been and are able to see the other ways things can be and kind of take a step back and change. Those are like, okay. I think, big inflection points. I have to think on a specific person, though. No one comes to mind.
Okay, so here's maybe this one's a bit easier. Who are your favorite writers?
Oh, man. I really love Michael Pollan. I read a lot of his work. And I can't not mention, don't know how to pronounce name, but the Three-Body Problem author. Been having a lot of good conversations about his work. Good way to like see things from a different perspective. I think Pollan also does that really well with just like seeing plants in a totally novel light.
Cool. All right. What's your idea of perfect happiness?
Man. Like personally or like generally?
You tell me. There's no wrong answer.
Yeah. I think personally, it would just be like being able to explore whatever is interesting to me and just being able to like work on art or cooking or whatever and just be around, you know, my closest friends and be able to hang out, just have an easy time.
So question, can you take a vacation if you're the sole developer of Black Box?
I have to talk to the boss and
who's the
sometimes
boss?
It doesn't go well, but he's not a nice guy.
okay.
Cool. No, I take some good vacation time. Yeah. trying to take advantage of doing this thing while I can. So
yeah. Well, I mean, that's the beauty of being able to work remotely too, like you mentioned earlier, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How about this? Who's your favorite hero of fiction?
Fictional hero.
It can be a movie, comic book, novel, science fiction.
I think I'm learning that I don't have a lot of like clear heroes.
All right. What's your favorite word?
Ooh, I really love didactic. Mm-hmm. Good one.
Why do you like didactic? The meaning or the feels when you say it, or
I like the way. I like the way it sounds, and I like that it itself is kind of memorable in that way. Yeah, I think there's some other ones like noetic. Like two. I do have favorite words. I just don't have people.
Cool. All right. A bunch of these questions are about people, so I'm going to skip over them. What's your most treasured possession?
Oh, probably that 10 centimeter cube of aluminum that lights up when I touch it.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Does it?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
It's safely stored in my parents' house. I haven't dared fly with it or mail it over here.
Really? Cool.
It's on loan to their trophy cabinet of my dad's surf trophies.
Yeah, I wonder if the neutron star in the middle of it will implode if you've tried to fly with it.
Yeah, triple A's.
Does it have a battery compartment?
It's very user replaceable.
Oh, really? That's nice. Well, that's surprising.
Yeah, it is.
Cool. Do they have a lightning port in the back for charging it?
I've wanted to put a 10-pin dock connector in it for years, but haven't gotten to that project.
Right. Cool. Well, a friend of mine, actually, who works for a fruit company, he's a woodworker. And so he made some out of wood, like really nice looking, like
88, like the Apple Design Awards.
Yeah. And he 3D printed the little Apple logo that lights up.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. I don't know what he's done with them all, but I'd love to get my hands on one. Yeah. Cool. Let's see. What else can I ask you? That's where would you most like to live?
Actively figuring that out. Somewhere that seems to have some sanity to it and good infrastructure and wild nature. Yeah, I think something I like about here is it kind of feels like a town and a city in one. Mm-hmm. Has some of those small aspects and big aspects. I would love to be a little closer to like wild, untouched nature that you have in California.
Yeah.
Good food.
We have lots of untouched nature here in Canada too.
Do need to poke around Canada more. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like my brother-in-law is starting to mow the lawn again. So
okay.
It's a good time to end this. So can you tell our listeners and viewers where they would be able to find you on the interwebs?
Yeah. I think best place is probably Twitter, and I'm there as Warpling, like warping with an R, and feel free to send me a message there.
Cool. All right. And I normally ask people what they're working on next, but I have a feeling it's going to be working on Black Box next, right?
Yeah. I have lots of other ideas and I'm trying to make the room for them, but right now it's a Black Box. So
is it like a full day, like 40-hour a week kind of deal, or?
I'm trying to not do 40-hour weeks anymore. So development's gotten slow down because I used to work on weekends and stuff, but it's a full-time thing. Yeah. Definitely don't have enough time.
Oh, all right. Well, thanks for joining us, and
thanks for having me.
See you out in the Twitter sphere.
Yeah, hopefully at a conference near you soon.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fireside.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC, and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is @MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. We'll
great. Thanks for joining me, John.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I can't believe it's been this long. See you in a few years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at one point I was hoping to get a t-shirt from you, but I got the pin. The pins last longer than the t-shirts, right?
Oh, yeah, true. You missed the Cotton Bureau days, I thought.
Yeah.
We didn't, yeah.
But this is something I've wanted to do for a while because, like, you may have heard of Roundabout Creative Chaos. I was on with Tammy Coron. We interviewed a number of people, and so I'm sort of going through a bucket list of developers that I wanted to talk to, because we had a list of people we put forward, and Tammy did all the scheduling, and she would reach out to people, and so there was probably about 10 names, yours included, on that list. And so I'm kind of going to James Thompson was one that's on the list. Yeah, so cool. I got him off there. So, and then there are a few more people, so I'll be approaching them. But yeah, and I also unofficially, Black Box is the puzzle of the More Than Just, the official puzzle of the More Than Just Code podcast, right? So
I appreciate that.
Yeah, we felt we discovered.
I was just going to say, I was curious because I was looking at our communication and I felt like we did the Creative Chaos interview recently, but it was like the very beginning.
Did we talk on Creative Chaos?
Yeah, I think so. 2016, I think.
Oh, okay. Okay, right. Cool. Well,
yeah.
This is a catch-up then.
Terribly confused about it, though. I mean, it feels like it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
It's time.
Yeah.
Got your hands in many pots.
For sure. Yeah, I got a full-time job. I'm on vacation this week, which is why I'm out here in New Brunswick. So
I don't understand how you do all the different things. I try taking on a side thing, and everything falls apart.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it comes from because I started as an artist, I always had different things going on. Like, you know, I would have like a sculpture class and have a painting class. And so
teaching
doing the course.
Oh, cool.
Right? Yeah. So, yeah. And then, you know, when I was working for myself, it was like, managed services, but I was also teaching iOS and doing iOS.
Yeah.
So it was just, I've always been able to just sort of go off and explore things on my own. I mean, like, you know, I have fun. Like, I have a 3D printer at home and,
cool.
You know,
so I haven't with started that hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do a number of things, but I think probably because I was a multidisciplinary artist from the get-go, sort of not unusual for me to want to try and do different things.
Cool.
So I think I would suck if I had to do the same job every day for 30 years. Right. So
yeah. Different brain, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Find a different way to keep it interesting. Cool. Thanks, man. I'm going to make some dinner.
All right. Talk to you later. Yeah.
Good chatting.
It's late there. Okay.
Oh, no worries. See you online.
Bye. Yeah, bye.